Welcome to episode 119 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. My name's Alan Olson, and joining me is the ever-wonderful Eric Barzeski.
Mr. Lovable.
How you doing, Alan, or Eric? Or?
I'm great, even though I live in Wisconsin.
Wow, that joke never gets old.
Also known as Minnesota.
Yes, it's the, whatever.
We don't live in Korea, though.
No, so we don't.
We couldn't understand anything that Eun Hee Ji said after she won the U.S. Women's Open.
Everything was through the interpreter, and I think this is, what, third or fourth out of the last 5 years?
I think it's the sixth first-time winner.
Yeah. South Korea is dominating the U.S. Open. They had Christy Kerr won a couple years ago, but sandwich around that is a lot of South Korean wins.
Yeah, what Christy Kerr had to say, didn't need an interpreter either, even if she didn't necessarily speak English, because it was some self-flagellation or something that went on. Although, there are some bad signs. She couldn't hit fairways and stuff coming in. She really didn't play well at all on Sunday. She was one over par, I think, when I turned it on. She bogeyed three of the first six or seven holes with one birdie in there. It wasn't a great start, and she didn't finish well either. But there was a bad sign. I forget who the player was, but her caddy was on the bag when another player had lost an 11-stroke lead in the U.S. Women's Open. How do you lose an 11-stroke lead? We thought Nick Faldo taking over from Greg Norman from six shots back in the Masters was big. 11 shots. Who wants that caddy? How can you not get a player into the clubhouse with an 11-shot lead?
Yeah, you'd think he would be banned forever as far as that goes. That is pretty surprising. I watched a little bit Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and pretty much was ready to give the trophy to Kerr and move on and turn it on Sunday, and she was kind of throwing up all over herself.
Yeah, and we could have given the trophy to Paula Creamer, but she made a triple bogey on a drivable par 4 on Saturday. She ended up finishing tied for 6th, 4 shots back. The winner was at even par. She was plus 4. 3 of those 4 were right there on that one hole.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. I mean, you don't expect that, especially on a drivable par 4, to see her, you know, completely hit a sand wedge 9 miles over the green. And yeah, that was brutal.
It's interesting, too. The men played a U.S. Open par 3 at Oakmont, the 8th hole, which played about 300 yards, and the women, half of them at least, laid up on a 250-yard par 4, just to give you an idea of the distance disparity between the two tours. Paula Creamer should have probably laid up in hindsight. She only flew the ball 210 or so. It's surprising.
Yeah, it definitely was the biggest surprise of just how short the women were hitting it. I mean, you have a 185-yard par 3, and everybody's hitting hybrids.
The course was shortened 400 yards, I think, which played probably quite a bit into some of the other players. Christy Kerr built her lead on a course playing almost 6,700 yards the first 3 days, and then was shortened to 6,300 yards the last day. I think that had a lot to do with Kerr's downfall in it. It let players overtake her. Johnny Miller made the comment that a lot of players didn't seem to be prepared for a lot of the shorter tees that were used on Sunday, which is, that's just bad preparation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they had to kind of figure out there was going to be, especially with an inch of rain falling on Saturday night, they had to figure out they were going to shorten it up a little bit. So yeah, that was just kind of bizarre to see. Sunday was just a bizarre round to watch.
Steve Stricker won the John Deere Classic against a field of a bunch of so-so people. I don't know. There's a lot of, the PGA Tour is seeing a lot of multiple winners. We got Phil, we got Kenny, we got Tiger, we got Steve Stricker now, we got Zach Johnson.
Yeah, that was definitely kind of bizarre.
With Paul Gordos losing a bunch of tournaments in the last round, multiple times.
Multiple Tour loser this year. I mean, there again, it's hard to get.
Good for him.
Yeah, it was great for Stricker, he, you know.
36 holes on Sunday.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Flying to Britain, good luck.
Hey, but at least he's on, you know, the chartered jet that they flew everybody over on.
And come on, he's got a caddy. You know, he's not lugging his own bag around, so whatever.
That's true.
He had an eagle and finished with lots of birdies. Last time I checked, he was leading by one, and he ended up winning by three. So one thing to point out here, Tim Petrovic was in his group, 2 strokes off the lead heading into the last hole of the day, went for the green, tried to make a birdie or possibly an eagle, dunked his ball left of in the pond. Had he finished just part of the hole, he would have been in the British Open. He went for the win, got the double bogey, not in the British Open. So I commend him for going for the win, but you know, this isn't like a Sean O'Hare thing, going for the green at going for the flag at the 17th at Sawgrass, just trying to win the tournament. I think you gotta, you know, I wouldn't fault him for playing safe in that situation, Tim Petrovic, and getting into a major. you know, that's a bigger deal than winning the John Deere Classic.
Yeah, absolutely. That was pretty surprising to see, and yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of, well, not really laying up, but laying out.
Laying off.
Laying resigning, off.
Firing, getting kicked out the door.
Don't let the door hit you in. Anyway, yeah, we talked about this last week. Apparently,
I give him credit. It took him forever to act, but now that they've acted, poof.
Go on.
Done.
They let Bivens run roughshod for a couple of years and kind of hemmed and hawed about her, and then all of a sudden, boom, she's out the door. We thought she'd, you know, maybe last until, you know, maybe the next event.
August 23rd, we were talking, you know, or whatever their tournament starts, yeah.
Yeah, whoever had July 10th in the pool, congratulations.
I had 2006 in the pool, so I don't think I win much.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Bivens gone with the nice, happy golden parachute.
Maybe.
Yeah, we don't know, but odds are
she's got a
couple years left on her contract, and her replacement should be entertaining.
The LPJ, the sinking ship that it is, pun completely intended, they name a former Navy
admiral.
A retired rear admiral from the Navy to right the sinking ship that is the LPJ. I'm sure there's plenty of bad puns out there about that, so I apologize for adding to those. She will be the interim commissioner, has no intention, no interest either at being the full-time commissioner. They got a search party going on for that person. Names thrown around are Cindy Davis, head of Nike Golf. She also worked for the PGA Tour. Donna Orender is the head of the WNBA, which, as bad as the LPGA Tour is as far as ranking in the world of sports, I have to think the WNBA is even lower because I didn't know they still had WNBA games, to be honest with you, but
yeah. Sure.
Okay, so that might be a step up. Plus, she's the wife of a former president or something of the PGA of America, so
yeah, definitely.
Obviously a lot of possibility there.
Yeah.
Laura Ball on the Golf Channel recommended Donald Trump. Mm. You know, I think if you could find an unemployed Donald Trump, he might be a good thing to go, but I don't think he quite has the time. I think he's too busy making $1 million a day to worry about the LPGA.
Yeah, I don't think this is...
I think someone like him could do something great, but he's not going to, because, duh.
No, there's no point for him to do it. You know, I suppose he could hold LPG events at every one of his courses, so maybe the Donald Trump.
That's true.
Donald Trump.
Yeah, he could sponsor them all and just have them all at his 18 or 19 courses, and then that would be the tour.
But at least they would get to play.
Yeah, and that's the key thing. That's what the players want. The players want to be able to play tournaments, and right now they have like 10 in the U.S. next year. That's not a lot of tournaments. As a German professional, you don't really care much about your pension. You know, if you can make $3 million over the course of 10 years and you invest it somewhat wisely, you kind of have a pension right there. They want to play. They, you know, that stuff 30 years down the line, that's great. And if they can get there someday, that'll be awesome. But they're not going to get there playing 8 tournaments a year either. So
yeah,
a little bit of a cart before the horse and a hard line approach by Bivens did not work out. And you know, frankly, I'm tired of this whole thing where she's portrayed as a victim of the economy or something. You have to recognize that the economy is forcing your sponsors to do certain things. And you know, the many missteps that Carolyn Bivens has made, she's not a victim of those things. You know, she didn't choose to have a media boycott. Or a media boycott didn't happen to her. She's the one that put a policy in place that made the media boycott her tour for a week or two. Staff left because of her. She wasn't victimized. You know, all these things that are painting her as a victim, they're disgusting as far as the truth goes, because they're way off base.
I mean, the spin control is definitely in full force when it comes to what's going on with her right now, and it's a pretty pathetic attempt at trying to right the wrongs now that she's attempted to do the last couple of years.
Yeah, so the PGA Tour or the LPGA Tour knows that they have to talk with some of the sponsors. You know, we may see the Corning event again if you know the new people, the new interim people. One of the ladies from the German Futures Tour has kind of been promoted to a role where she'll be taking over kind of those negotiations, most likely. So, you know, we could see some things there. We could see that tournament returning. We could see Rochester. We could see Toledo, the Jamie Farr. You know, we could see some of those. We could even see the ShopRite Classic and then Atlantic City come back again because they got bumped out for the Ginn event that Bivens pushed hard for before Ginn filed for bankruptcy. We'll see. There's a lot going on. You can read the stories. We obviously haven't touched on much of the news, but we kind of trust that people have read the news, and
yeah,
this is our opinion. We'll be back after this.
On a scorecard, all shots are created equal. A stroke is a stroke.
From the first tee
to the 18th green,
there's only one piece of equipment
I use for every one of them.
My golf ball.
My golf ball.
And in a
game or just one shot can decide a championship,
the bull you play makes a difference.
And that's why there's only one ball.
There's only one ball I'd ever play.
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Our forum topic of the week, no surprise, we are going to do a little official Open Championship prediction. It was started by MCF, well, it doesn't matter. We're going to talk a little bit about the Open this week. It's at Turnberry, and who's going to win?
Tom Watson. Oh, wait, that was...
Sandy Lyle.
not Colin Montgomery.
Brett Quigley? Yeah.
Yeah, Brett Quigley. Oh, that's something I wanted to talk about with the John Deere. The idiot turned down. He won an exemption to the Open Championship, and he turned it down.
Just comment, my heart's not into playing the British.
It's a major. You've never won anything.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's...
Screw you, Brett Quigley.
That is just... That's,
seriously, screw you, Brett Quigley.
That is mind-boggling. But for players that...
He's made such a comfortable living doing jack squat. I envy his skills. He's obviously very skilled to have lasted on the PGA Tour for as long as he has. But man up, dude. Try to win some.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, this
Turnberry's produced good champions. We got the best players at the time that it was played. Every time it's been there. We got Tom Watson. We got Greg Norman. We got Nick Price.
And for this time...
Who's the best player in the world right now? That's my pick. And just, it's mostly for that reason. If you have to give me the field versus Tiger, I'm taking the field every time. But if you have to pick one guy, like I said, you're an idiot if you pick anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, Tiger, I mean, he's proven before. He doesn't have to hit his driver if he doesn't want to or doesn't feel the need to, and he can still win by a half dozen strokes, so.
And there's talk that he may not hit it much this week, like you did at Hoylake. So, okay, Tiger out. Who else do you pick? Someone, you know, Nancy Kerrigan's Tiger or something.
Or
he gets the bad side of the weather.
I think you could easily, you could possibly go with a Paul Casey would possibly be a good idea. Duvall, I don't know. I think he's going to be a sentimental pick. It's hard to say. I mean, was the U.S. Open a springboard or just a one-time deal?
Steve Stricker?
Too tired.
Kenny Perry?
No.
I'm picking Hunter Mahan.
Ooh.
What the heck?
I was going to go with Zach Johnson as a possibility.
We'll see how that goes.
He's played well. And there's some
post your thoughts in the forum thread.
Yeah. Let us know what you think.
Our full article will be out Wednesday night or Thursday morning or something. So you can read our full thoughts there. We don't want to give too much away.
Nope. Top secret.
We'll be back after this.
On a scorecard, all shots are created equal.
A stroke is a stroke.
And from the first tee to the 18th green,
there's only one piece of equipment
I use for every one of them.
My golf ball. And in a game where just one shot can decide a championship,
the ball you play
makes a difference.
Makes a difference.
And that's why there's only one ball I'd ever play.
That's why there's only one ball
I'd ever play.
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
The beating ball segment, very short one this week. The USGA is going to change the Women Open qualifying criteria. Basically, they're going to take it from an 18 local qualifier and a 36-hole sectional qualifier, and it's now just going to be a 36-hole sectional qualifier for non-exempt players. So they're going to shorten it up a little bit.
Cool. I also hope they change their exempt status to more accurately, basically to allow rookies who play well on the LPGA Tour through, you know, mid-June to play. Michelle Wee being a rookie, Natalie Gobos not being a rookie, but having been injured last year. They took the top 35 from last year's money list and the top 10 from this year. Michelle Wee was 16th or 12th, or, you know, she was hovering around the top 15 or top 20 all year. Did not get in. Natalie Gobos was a little further down. I think she was 30th or 29th or 34th or something like that. So she would have gotten in with the top 35. But rookies and people who were injured the year before are really kind of hurt by that top 10 on the current year money list thing. It's a really short list, and most of them are probably in the top 35 from the previous year. So,
yeah,
I kind of hope they change that as well. But this is good, too.
Yep, definitely a good start, and hopefully they make some additional changes.
And it'll be interesting to see how the women do at Oakmont next year.
It will be.
Because they can't putt.
Oh, man. And we saw plenty of three putts this last weekend, and it could be brutal. So it'd be fun to see how they set it up compared to how it was set up.
They have to put the fairway mowers on the greens there. I don't know. All right, they're better than that, but they can't putt as well as the guys.
No, even the guys were having trouble with it. So it'll be fun to watch, and hopefully they make a few changes and get some more people there. Speaking of changes, Changing par.
I was going to make a joke about how,
oh,
since Tiger said a 10 handicapper can't break 100, it would be interesting to see how many women do. But
that would be mean.
That's mean. That's a little too much. And obviously I'm kidding because they won't have the same course setup. Anyway.
Speaking of the same course setup, we might see a changing par. USGA is contemplating changing the numbers. Why not? Par 80 or something, or par 50. At Chambers Bay is going to be hosting the 2015 U.S. Open, and there's some debate as it could be par 70, par 71, or maybe both.
I think the USGA should make it like a par 87, and that way they could say, see, we don't really care about how far under par the winning score is. This guy shot 22 under par.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Right? Oh, I like this idea. It extends the flexibility that they've been building in recent years where they have short par 4s, reachable par 5s, you know, par 3s that play anywhere from 210 yards or whatever to 140 yards for the guys. I think it was the third hole or something at Torrey Pines where they had the two tees that were 60 or 70 yards apart. I think it's interesting. And, you know, who cares? It'll be funny, though, the first time the U.S. Open will have par for 4 days at 282 because that's not, you know, divisible by four evenly, so that'll be interesting. But, you know, par's just a number, and, you know, if the course changes day to day, so be it.
Yeah, it is definitely an interesting idea for them to try out, and, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, the weather, I mean, it's really far down the road, and to some degree it is, but 6 years, I guess, we'll be there, so we'll find out what happens.
Yeah, Tiger said, can't change par in the middle of the tournament. Tiger Woods might not be playing golf then, who knows?
Yeah, maybe he wins enough majors by then. Oh,
he'll be almost 40.
He'll be old.
Yeah, he might have 22 majors by then, who knows?
Or he'll buy the PGA Tour. Or maybe the LPGA Tour. Maybe he'll buy them all.
That'd be awesome. Then he'd have the Tiger Tour, and it wouldn't even be the PGA Tour.
Sponsored by just Tiger.
Massengill. No, that's something I don't understand, though. The LPGA Tour, and it's been said by other people, they always seem to go after sponsors that the PGA Tour has. You know, those same kinds of things. Obviously not the ED type sponsors, but, you know, banks and things like that. Why not, like, cosmetics and stuff? Where's, like, the L'Oreal Open, you know, or the Tampax Tournament of Champions. I don't know. Not to, you know, there are female products or female audience, you know, where you can pitch like a strong woman, you know, because they're skilled. Most of them are attractive. Some of them speak English. Women, and you could use that as, I would think, a woman's product of some kind. You know, again, cosmetics, you know, whatever the heck they put in Cosmo. I don't even know. Those things. Designers. I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean,
Macy's, right? You'd think some of those people would be sponsors of the LPGA Tour. Instead, we get Owens Corning. They make insulation. Like, what?
Glass for plasma TVs. Yeah, it is pretty interesting, some of the sponsors that they do have. I mean, it's just, I don't know if it's just the long history of some of these regional, you know, you get regional grocery chains and that kind of stuff. And it does seem kind of bizarre that you don't have
women's products, we'll just put it that way.
Yeah, whether it's
traditional women's marketing companies. Again, cosmetics, whatever they have in Cosmo. I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know. Shoes, clothes.
Yeah, shoes, clothes. We're a bunch of misogynists. Shoes, clothes, shopping, food, cooking supplies, laundry, detergents. Be awesome.
But I mean, no, we're just...
There's no way for us to look good. We're done.
The Target Open.
We're done.
Yes.
The end of episode 119. It was all downhill from Tampax Tournament of Champions.
Oh my. Yep.
I'm done. The end. Stop.